Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 58 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And the title for this particular episode is The Jasprit Juggernaut, because we will be talking about the one and only Jasprit Bumrah on his own dedicated Footmarks podcast. And Jared, since returning from injury, Bumrah is enjoying a peak which is freakish in nature. In 31 international matches across formats since coming back from injury, he's taken 74 wickets at less than 16 apiece and at an economy of under 4 runs per over. He's also striking at just over, you know, a wicket every 25 deliveries. And the phase of the game, the format, and the playing conditions, they do not matter to him. Jasprit Bumrah is operating at an otherworldly level for roughly 9 months now. And we might never have seen anything like this before.
No, it might be one of the greatest peaks of any bowler ever. Especially when you factor in across formats and everything else. And he's touching that level of, we just need him to play more test cricket now. So that he's banked in 200 wickets. We just need 200 wickets. If he's got 200 wickets, we've got no issue of putting him on that list. And he just needs to get to that mark. Once he gets to that mark, he's kind of ticked off all the boxes. We hope he plays more test cricket than that. But he's just so unplayable at times now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to ask you if you've seen anything close or similar to this before. I mean, we know about the Waqar Yunus of the early 90s, right? Before he got injured. We've seen Dale Steyn in more recent times completely, you know, wreak havoc across formats. And then, of course, you've got that, you know, a quartet of West Indian fast bowlers, the four horsemen in the 80s. Do any of those compare to the peak that, or do any of their peaks compare to the one that Bumrah is enjoying right now? Because I saw Holding's overall numbers. He's played lesser games and bowled in lesser innings than Bumrah and has one lesser wicket or two lesser wickets. But of course, different time, right?
Yeah. A very different kind of career, all things considered, the way that Michael Holding played. I don't think we've really seen anything specifically like this before. But if you go back, there would probably be times when, especially when Mitchell Starc or Glenn McGrath was going nuts in World Cups, I would assume at the same time we saw something quite similar, right? Whether it's quite at the level of dominance in all three formats that Bumrah's got, I would have to go back and have a look at it and see if anyone's ever done anything like this before. But if you look at it from that perspective, there's only a handful of people that have these skills to be able to do it, right? So even Malinga, who we obviously compare him with, is in that. The one thing I would say is that Murali had 2 years where he took over 120 wickets in a year of international, over 120 international wickets in a year. And I think it's, McGrath in 1999, I was looking this up the other day, has 199 wickets. In 1999 has 119 wickets. And we've got Mitchell Johnson also had 113 wickets in 1 year as well. So we have had some bowlers play, you know, take a lot of wickets in 1 year. I think Warne has 120 1 year, an average of 19 across all the formats. And there's another year where Alan Donald has an average of 18 with more than 100 wickets. And the one other multi-format bowler that I think we have to mention is that Joel Garner also did that. He took more than 100 international wickets in 1 year at 18. So, yes, we have had years like that before, but international cricket was different in those days. And you played more and you didn't have to worry about the IPL.
Yeah, right? That's true.
So, you know, there are other things that you see here. So, Bumrah's not on that level of wicket taking, but on impact, he quite clearly is, right?
Yes. And I mean, of course, he's been, What should I even say? He's been fantastic is not a good enough adjective. He's been otherworldly or, you know, completely unreal in all formats since his return from injury. But T20 cricket is, you know, the format in which he's literally unplayable. You look at the T20 World Cup that's currently ongoing. We don't know what would have happened in the semi-final or if the semi-final even would have happened and not gotten rained out, because this episode is going to come after that. But up until now, it's just that Australia game in which he's gone for a few runs, 29 to be exact. He's been unplayable. And in, you know, T20 internationals for India since his return from injury, he's taken 15 wickets in 8 games. His average is 8.73, so less than 9. And his economy is 4.24, which, you know, just let me just remind everyone that this is T20 cricket we're talking about. 4.24. In his last 24 overs for India, he has only gone for more than 10 runs twice. How is this even real?
Yeah, and this comes on the back of probably a more miraculous bowling effort, which was the IPL, which was the most high-scoring tournament we've ever seen in T20 cricket, and no one could hit him. So it's not as if this is a one-off thing. Mm. We are seeing this consistently at the moment, and his gravitational force is massive.
Yeah. I mean, you spoke about the IPL and how it was the highest-scoring T20 competition of all time, you know, throughout the short history of T20 cricket that we've had. Bumrah played 13 games in the IPL, took 20 wickets, and his economy rate was 6.5 in that tournament. And he was averaging under 17. He was striking once every 15 and a half deliveries. So that just goes on to tell you that even in a tournament where everyone was hitting sixes for fun, it was raining sixes in boundaries, Bumrah wasn't getting hit. And I feel like his performance in the IPL is a bigger testament to all that he's doing in the T20 World Cup right now, because he's probably faced some stronger batting lineups in that tournament on surfaces that aid batting.
Yeah. And also, you can have a sort of an outlier performance in a World Cup just because it's fewer games, right? Yeah. And, you know, you might get a couple of surfaces that help you and, you know, people take some great catches against you. You get a couple of half and half LBWs. The IPL and this coming back to back, I mean, not that we knew it was a fluke, but we know this is his current level.
Yeah. And that level is unprecedented. It's unheralded in many, many ways. You spoke about Lasith Malinga earlier. He is considered as one of the greatest ever T20 bowlers, you know, of all time and all that. And if we look at his true economy in all 20 overs of the IPL, he is better than Bumrah in just 5 overs. So Bumrah is better than someone who is regarded as the best ever 75% of the time in an IPL game. And what's crucial to note over here is that in the last 3 overs of an IPL game, Bumrah goes for lesser runs than Malinga. He has a better true economy. And Malinga was a death over specialist. So that makes Bumrah all the more crazy. It's bizarre.
Yeah. And one of the reasons I compared them was because I didn't know that Bumrah would have that much a better of a record, but I thought they'd have a similar record. And so Bumrah was already well ahead. But I compared them because they both have actions that is the core of their success. Right? And in some ways, you could say that about every bowler, as in, you know, Joel Garner had an action that was the core of his success, but he was 6'7". But what I'm trying to say is that their actions are such outliers that's where their success originally comes from. And then what they both manage to do in different ways is layer on other skills as they go.
Yeah. And I mean, you spoke about the action. Of course, Bumrah has a freakish one. It is one of the reasons of him being successful. And you know, the nuance over there is that action allows him to do something that not many other bowlers can. He basically delivers the ball around half a meter closer to batters than all the other or most of the other bowlers. And he's thereby shortening the pitch. Now, how important is this little intricacy and how much does that increase Bumrah's threat and potency?
If you watch him, he bowls a ball at 88 miles an hour and rushes guys. And then someone at the other end will bowl the ball at 90 miles an hour and not rush someone.
That's true.
That is the difference. And it's not just him. So Naveen Al-Haq has another similar action. And have a look at Naveen Al-Haq. He quite often, again, rushes people at like 86 miles an hour sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's because the ball speed doesn't matter if you're delivering it from half a meter closer. You know, I forget now. I did work it out on a previous video about Bumrah at one stage, how much quicker that makes him. But it doesn't matter how much quicker it makes him. What it really means is that every time you face him, it feels like that ball is coming earlier than you expect. Because as the ball releases from his hand, you are trained to expect the 18 to 19 meters or whatever it is. And he's just taken half a meter off that.
Yeah.
And so it's really, really important from that point of view. And you go through all the different things of his action. He doesn't have a long run-up.
Yeah.
Batters take information from longer run-ups, right? He's more accurate than most bowlers of his pace, and he's more in control of the things that he can do, and he's also accurate with the variations, right? Yeah. So you compare his slower ball to other slower balls, and he puts it in the right spot over and over again. So he's got these, he's got, you know, just strength on top of strength on top of strength. And yes, it all comes from that one thing, but Navin Ahluk has the exact same advantage that Jasper Bumrah does. He doesn't have all the other tools that Jasper Bumrah has, right?
Yeah.
And maybe he will. And maybe this will be the new method of bowling when everyone can work out how to copy these two actions, right?
Yeah.
But where we currently stand is that this seems, it's a huge advantage over everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, by shortening the pitch, he also gives batters lesser time to react because he's releasing the ball later and from, you know, a position which is further closer to the stumps, I suppose. And you mentioned the run-up, of course. Now, that's something that we used to see Wasim Akram do back in his the latter part of his career, I'd like to say. In the 90s, Wasim had a very short run-up and he was devastating batters left, right and center. Bumrah has something similar. It's also an interesting run-up, right? It's not a standard run-up. He's leaping like this, I don't know, handicapped horse at times at an angle. But it's crazy how there's not enough time for batters to gather as much information. And just looking at it, you know, you don't really know what to expect. So much happens from start to finish in a Jasprit Bumrah delivery. Do you think that those two things combined, we'll talk about his variations and his accuracy later, but the combination of the shorter run-up and the release point being, you know, closer to the stumps, how crucial is that combination towards his success?
Yeah, no, it's massive. Anything you can do as a test match bowler that is different is an, international bowler, I should say, is different.
Yeah.
While still maintaining all the other skills you need is absolutely an advantage. So if you're Chris Wokes, right, it doesn't matter how talented you are, everyone has grown up facing someone with Chris Wokes' action.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has grown up facing someone with Srisant's action. Right?
True.
Everyone has grown up watching someone with Brett Lee's action. They're really standard. You see them in club cricket all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The minute you pivot a little bit, and you have the bowling to back it up, it's a huge advantage. So that is what batters are looking for, is the, you know, oh, okay, yep, I've got this. He's going to release this here, and it's going to do this, and I can handle this. You change that slightly, and batters are in a different mindset.
Yeah, and when we talk about accuracy specifically, you know, you can think of the likes of Vernon Philander, really, really accurate bowler, also bowled some wobble seam. Glenn McGrath was someone who I always kind of go back to those videos in which we saw McGrath hitting a coin, you know, at that good length over and over and over again. You've also got the tainted Mohammad Asif, who was very, very accurate. But those guys could bowl at their designated length all day, 24/7, 365. Bumrah, however, has multiple lengths for his different variations, and he nails each of those lengths every single time with all of those different variations. Now, that is a very extremely rare skill to have.
I would say most bowlers in the world, if you were to ask them what their biggest issue is, they would come up with two. And it is the ability to bowl stumps when they have to, because that is not their normal delivery, or the ability to change their length. And sometimes the combination of two, it's funny, I was talking to Steve Harmison the other day for TalkSport, and he was saying that, you know, he would fight with captains about, they would just say, just bowl at the stumps. And he's like, but I never bowl at the stumps. My job is not to bowl at the stumps. And then suddenly a tail ender's out. You want me to bowl fuller than I usually bowl and straighter than I usually bowl, right? Yeah. And there are some bowlers who have multiple lengths. And, you know, you got someone like Joel Garner and Glenn McGrath, who obviously had great Yorkers and had great sort of back of a length deliveries, right? And probably in both of their cases, they could bowl length when they needed to as well. It's very rare to have 4 and 5 lengths. And Jasprit Bumrah does actually have them. And he also has an ability to pitch his cutters on the right length as well, which again is another hard skill. So he's got about 5 lengths that he can bowl and then he knows how to bowl and will bowl a really good delivery on. That is just not a normal thing for a bowler to have. And you could see that he clumps them in the right areas when you look at the pitch map that he bowls. We're not talking about someone who... So someone like Pat Cummins is really interesting. Pat Cummins is really deadly straight. He's one of the most accurate fast bowlers we've ever seen online, even more so than Bumrah, right?
Top of off.
Almost never misses his line. And you can see the way that he is bowling all the time. Bumrah's not like that. Bumrah can get the line wrong and Dale Steyn can get the line wrong a little bit at times. But you could see with with Cummins, he doesn't really have one, he doesn't have like clumps of lengths. He just has sort of a bunch of different lengths on the same line. And he's like, if I keep bowling this tight line long enough, occasionally I'll overpitch and occasionally I'll get the ball wrong. Whereas Bumrah doesn't have that. He's just like, no, this is the length for this ball. This is the length for this ball. And that's an amazing skill to have for a fast bowler because it is not how fast bowlers learn to bowl.
If you need your pitch change, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
Yeah, I mean, he has so many tricks up his sleeve. His arsenal is so vast that you never really know what to expect. And he nails all those lengths with those different variations. I mean, if you talk about his back of the length delivery, right, that's where he curbs the run scoring. His length balls are wicket balls and his Yorkers are absolutely devastating. What's interesting, however, Jared, is that even his slot balls don't go for runs. I mean, in the 2024 edition of the IPL, slot balls bowled by Bumrah resulted in an economy of 7.5 and an average of 30. In that same tournament, Bumrah's full tosses had an economy of 5.5 and an average of around 15. So when Bumrah is good, he's unplayable. And when he's bad, he's still a task and a half to negotiate, right? That is fucking insane.
Yeah. And some of that is the way he bowls. And it's because he's already rushing you. So even when he makes a mistake, you're behind the ball. Some of that is you're going up against Jasprit Bumrah. And the team has probably told you, don't play a stupid shot here. We just need to block him out. Part of that is probably because he's already beaten you once or twice in the over. Right? Yeah. And he's already snuck one through you. You know, there's all these different things that are going on there. But that is, and I think that's what we're starting to see now. And, you know, Ashish helped us with this piece, who's, you know, just joined our team recently. And you see in basketball that Reggie Miller played in the 90s. And Reggie Miller now is thought of as a much better player now than he was in the 90s. He never won a title, so he couldn't have been that good. Now we can go back and we go, well, actually, Reggie Miller was much better in these sorts of situations, but he ran an offense on his own without the ball in his hand.
Yeah.
And his impact on the whole court was that someone had to be chasing Reggie Miller at all times, and every other player on the court had to be keeping half their eye out to see where the hell this guy was running because he was going to get the ball and shoot it. What we are now starting to be able to look at in cricket is a similar kind of impact, right, of how we do that. And we could see it within Bumrah's over. The full tosses are there. It might be that he's bowling from a little bit closer. It might be that he has more backspin than other bowlers. It might be a few other things. But it's also the effect of Jasprit Bumrah is that his best balls, you're still his worst balls, you're still nervous of because he's bowling them.
Yeah. His bad balls have numbers recently which are better than entire careers of bowlers, right? Like, that's where he's at currently. Another thing that's extremely tough to do versus Bumrah is to attempt a pull when he bowls that back of a length delivery, right? In that current IPL or previous IPL, IPL 2024, batters, when they attempted the pull versus Bumrah, averaged 10. So that kind of tells you a story on its own. But he was impossible to take on with most shots, right? If you look at that whole scatter graph, any shot people tried to play against Bumrah, they were more or less screwed. And, you know, none of those batters, or at least the batters who are playing in the T20 World Cup, have managed something different either. Maybe Travis Head, he scored 3 boundaries off.
He's got a decent record against him. Yeah. He hasn't faced him a lot, but he actually has a decent record.
In a single over, he scored 3 boundaries versus Bumrah. So ultimately, Bumrah got him out. He had the last laugh. Point is that even batters who have a high range of shots, say Glenn Maxwell, who scores really quickly off Bumrah, get out to him really frequently, and they're probably in a worse situation because they have this entire range of different shots, but still do not know which ones they can play versus Bumrah effectively. He is just that good.
Yeah, I would love to see Bumrah against Viv Richards and Ricky Ponting because that would be the more interesting one because he's just unpullable, and so he can bowl back of a length and he can dry you up at any time he wants to. something about his action. Maybe, you know, he kind of gets inconsistent bounce on his back of a length ball sometimes. I don't know what it is. Or is it just that you have to be Ricky Ponting or Viv Richards level to be able to pull him?
Yeah.
It would be absolutely fascinating. You know, he doesn't play enough against Rohit, but I don't, as good a puller as Rohit is, I don't think he's in the Ricky Ponting, Viv Richards level. Mm. But that's a fascinating thing. But as you said before, there isn't really shots that you can play off any of his deliveries that are effective, especially in this recent period.
Yeah. And if we look at batters who have dominated Bumrah, right, throughout his career, two guys really stand out in terms of strike rate, JP Duminy and Manish Pandey. But then you can make an argument that that is from a period where Bumrah hadn't fully developed. He wasn't the Jasprit Bumrah that we see today. Now, Pat Cummins is someone who has done really well versus him, and he also took him on just now.
Hitting for a sixth today, like just before we recorded this.
Literally. And Dinesh Karthik is someone actually who's done really well, even against modern day Bumrah. I want to ask you, at least in Karthik's case, is it the unorthodoxy that DK developed later in his career that helped him kind of negotiate Bumrah better than others?
Yeah, I did look into it a little bit. It's an interesting one. I just think that I think he is someone who has a little bit of extra time against pace. Obviously, he can't play spin very well, was limited in other ways in his batting. I also think that he just found boundary options against Bumrah. And so has Pat Cummins. And people don't find boundary options against Bumrah, right? And that's the thing of, I think if you talk to most of those players, even someone like Len Maxwell, I think if you said, how do you hit boundaries against Bumrah? He would probably sigh. And if you can't hit boundaries against him, you can't put any pressure back on him. And if you can string those together, this is the funny thing is, he's not used to being hit for boundaries, right?
Yeah.
So if you have a good matchup against him, no one has a good matchup against him. So you might be able to string a few together, but realistically, you are talking about players who play him right at the death and who are very good at clearing the boundary handling fast bowling towards the end. It could just also be dumb luck on a couple of pitches.
Yeah.
Because there isn't enough of a pattern there that tells us that, you know, there's anything particularly special about those guys.
You mentioned how Ashish helped us, you know, dig up some numbers and Ashish helped us with assisted wickets. I just want to give everyone a quick briefing on what that means. It's basically the number of times a wicket has fallen on a delivery right after a specific bowler has completed his or her over. Now, if you take Jasprit Bumrah as that bowler, he is second only to Sunil Narayan in the IPL in terms of the sheer volume of assisted wickets. And if we look at assisted wickets per total balls bowled in the IPL, he is just behind T. Natarajan. Not surprising, these numbers, because, you know, considering how Bumrah is so hard to hit, batters are literally playing him out intentionally with the pressure building simultaneously. And then they feel the need to go bang as soon as Bumrah's over ends. He's taking wickets at both ends, basically.
And it's really important to say that we weren't looking at the full over after him. We're looking at one ball.
Yeah.
And there's a reason that we did that. And it is because after a couple of seconds, if the first ball you hit for a boundary, then all the pressure that Bumrah has built up has kind of slightly dissipated anyway. We're looking at one ball, and yet he still had so many wickets afterwards. I think that tells you something. But yes, he is taking wickets at both ends. And this is kind of what we believed. And I think someone sent me a link today saying R. Ashwin had talked about this before. This is something that we had believed. And I had a friend who talked years ago, we're still trying to work out the perfect method to do this. But we really wanted to look at something like the WinViz predictor, or maybe we might use the decimal win predictor. And having a look at what impact a player has on the chances of a side winning, even when they don't take wickets. Because that can be any, and I think Bumrah will probably have the highest percentage of that. I think he is shifting the odds of his team's chance of winning. And the fact is that after he has bowled, you are now usually down 3 or 4 runs on what you should be. And so because of that, you have to over-attack the bowler at the other end. And remember, we looked at this in the IPL when the Mumbai bowlers at the other end are not particularly good. Imagine Sunil Narayan's done it with some better bowling attacks for Kolkata over the years, right?
That's true.
And T. Natarajan has done it basically being pure death bowler, right? Be really fascinating to have a look at what the expected wickets of those bowlers were on those balls as well. Like, you could keep taking it to another level. My guess is that Bumrah has the biggest impact on anyone, just because once he's shut down that over, you have no option but to go for him.
Now,
go for the other guy.
Yeah, I mean, of course, that would make sense, right? Unless you're Mohammad Rizwan, then you would try to attack Jasprit Bumrah as soon as he comes in for a fresh new bowling spell. But, I mean, I've said this before, and it does not need to be repeated, but the phase of the game does not impact Jasprit Bumrah, particularly in T20 internationals. I feel like he's fantastic in the power play, and if you look at his death bowling, he is a seasoned death bowling specialist who often bowls the 17th and 19th overs of a T20 game, right? And if we look at his economy rates, if we look at the economy rates of overs number 16 and 18 across IPL seasons in games which Bumrah is involved in, batters strike at a higher rate in those overs, over 16 and 18, than the season's average scoring rate for those overs, you know, including the games where Bumrah isn't playing. Whenever he is playing, they're attacking those overs more. This, again, checks out, because batters know that scoring will be extremely tough when Bumrah is around in the 17th and 19th overs. And it just makes sense to throw the kitchen sink around Bumrah as opposed to at him, because that is, you know, you're asking for a dismissal and failure.
I think the amazing part of that is the 17th over or the 16th over. Because he hasn't yet bowled.
True. Right? And they know he's about
and
to come.
Sometimes he might not have bowled for a long time, right?
Yeah.
But we all know when he's likely to bowl, and he bowls the 17th and 19th so often. And that's the plan. That's the, you know, if Mumbai or India, whoever has him, that's the plan to bowl him in. And teams are like, okay, well, we're about to not score as many runs next over, and so we are going to have to go for him. I think that's just remarkable. And that goes back to the thing I was talking about with Reggie Miller before, where he is more than the overs he bowls because of the impact he has on the game around him, you know. And I'm sure if we looked at the 16th over mark, they probably goes for more runs on average than a normal 16th over. But you could take that further and see what the wickets is. My guess is that teams probably lose more wickets because of that in the over before, because of the threat of Jasprit Bumrah. So he is literally stretching the bowling attack out in the way that he does these things. And it's a remarkable, skill to have, and something that we really haven't seen all that much.
This particular threat, you know, where batters generally tend to attack the overs, you know, around Jasprit Bumrah, the only other bowler in contemporary cricket, or at least T20 cricket, that I can think of who had a similar sort of impact was Syed Ajmal. You look at Syed's figures and you'd never see three furs and four furs. You'd see one wicket, two wicket, but not a lot of runs. But what he did was that by keeping things extremely tight and not allowing batters to score freely, people would go after other bowlers and they would then get wickets. So it's crazy how there's not a single, like Narayan. Narayan is another bowler who I can think of doing this, right?
I mean, the thing is that Ajmal, Narayan, Rashid Khan, Malinga, Bhuvikumar. Yeah, even with Malinga, I don't think all those guys.
Yeah.
Very similar. I don't know if their bowling pattern was as known.
Hmm.
And in a way, the known part of it is more terrifying, because you have to actually plan your last four overs before the last four overs start.
That's true.
You have to plan your last four overs at the 15 and 16 over mark.
Hmm.
Right? I don't think that's quite the case with Malinga, although he's probably a little bit on that level. And you weren't ever sure with any of those spinners exactly what overs they were going to bowl. Right? Yeah. We know roughly. We know if Rashid hasn't bowled, that he's very likely not for Afghanistan to bowl the seventh over. And if it's for Afghanistan, he's more likely in the past anyway to bowl around the 11th or 12th, right? Or the 9th or 10th. But it's roughly.
Yes.
Yeah. With Bumrah, they don't even have to hide him.
Yeah.
They don't even have to be random with when they use him. They will be in games when Mumbai or India are losing, but in general, they don't need to do that, because even when you know when he's coming and what he's going to bowl, you still can't handle it. And I think that's a whole different level.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
That is true. I mean, we all know the exact overs that he's going to bowl at the death, right? It's known at this point. And also the length, right? If you look at his pitch map, sure, he bowls all these different lengths, but a lot of it is in that 7 to 9 meter range. People know what to expect, where it's going to come. They still can't do anything about it. They're completely at sea. And I think he might be the only bowler in T20 cricket history, at the very least, who has managed that, right? I can't really think of someone else. You also look at his speeds, Jared. If you look at the 2024 edition of the IPL, you know, he was bowling express pace, then his cutters, and then that medium range where he's bowling within himself, you know, 130 to 140 kilometers per hour. And of course, his average was best when he was express pace. And then if you go to his next best average, it was when he was bowling his cutters, because those were his incisive, you know, paces. But he went at 4 runs and over when he bowled within himself in that 130 to 140 kilometers per hour range. That is probably the weirdest Bumrah stat that I've come across, right? Because he's clearly done a number on T20 batters where they have absolutely no clue what to do. This is him just bowling, you know, standard stuff, and they can't, you know, buy a run off him. That's insane.
And that goes back to the thing we were talking about before of he doesn't actually need to bowl express pace to be effective. And he knows that. And it's different. If he wants to take a wicket, he goes up the speeds or he goes down the speeds, right? But when he just wants to stop you from scoring, he just puts the ball in the area where you can't score. And he knows he's very quick at reading pitches, and he knows a lot about different batters. He just puts the ball in that spot and he can coast.
Yeah.
Right? So you're not talking about a player, maybe someone like Dale Steyn, who I felt like was balls to the wall all the time, right?
Yeah.
You're not talking about, you mentioned peak Waqar Yunus.
Hmm.
Waqar Yunus couldn't coast. Waqar Yunus, the reason he was so great is because he bowled every ball to the limit of his ability, right? And then when his body wouldn't allow that, he just wasn't the same bowler anymore.
Yeah.
And Jasprit Bumrah is a completely different kind of character to that. And perhaps the one bowler you would compare him to then would be Joel Garner, who we know with Joel Garner, he had the ability to just go, I'm not going to bowl as fast as I normally do, but I'm going to put it in a place where you're not going to score anyway. And then later, if I need that extra pace, I'll come back. And again, that, you know, that is an incredible ability to go through that. But you also need that natural advantage of whatever it may be to put that ball in that other area. And then in Jasprit Bumrah's case, more so than Garner, just because wickets were a little bit different in Garner's case, but in Bumrah's case, he has to find the hole that guy can't score at. And then just go, well, it's 135 Ks an hour. It's not that fast, but you're not going to hit a boundary off this.
Hmm. And I mean, it's crazy how he can go at cruise control and batters will treat that at, you know, like a Ferrari, because they don't really know what to do at that point. And for him, he doesn't even have to go for those effort balls all the time. He can just keep things simple. So you get different kinds of bowlers in cricket. Some of them are too fancy. They try different things and some of them just stick to the task. Jasprit Bumrah can do both and be just as effective doing either, which is literally like the complete skill set. There's one thing in particular that I wanted to pick your brain on with respect to Bumrah and how he uses his wrist. I've seen close-ups of his wrist. And I mean, I could watch that footage all day. It's literally art. Him and the Fizz have really like high skill levels when it comes to, you know, using their wrists for pace bowlers in the modern era. I feel like, you know, all of that, you know, skill of how he kind of imparts different variations and how he kind of rolls his fingers over and his grip. All of that stuff is imperative towards him executing his skills to perfection. And, you know, with that weird action, it just gives batters a harder time. It's an absolute nightmare to assess and face, and they don't have any time to gather information on the run-up or kind of, you know, lesser time to react to the delivery as well because he's shortening the pitch. But how crucial are those wrists? Should they be insured?
I hope they are. yeah, I think what we're seeing is, so Glenn McGrath is probably one of the best wrist bowlers of the previous generation.
Hmm.
But Glenn McGrath used his wrist in the way that seamers use their wrist, which is just to snap down the back of the ball most of the time.
Yeah.
And he didn't bowl as many sort of off-cut, leg-cut in a sort of, you know, the way that Bedser did or the way that Prasad did, or those sorts of bowlers, right? So, but all those three bowlers that I've mentioned that all have magnificent wrists in different ways, use it in a conventional seam bowling way. I think what you're seeing with the Fizz and what you're seeing with Bumrah is the next evolution of fast bowling, which probably comes from two different things. One is Asia in general, and rubber ball bowling would be my guess. Whether it be tennis, whether it be tape ball, or whether it be tennis, hard tennis balls, whatever version that you grew up with, and if you grew up with both, I think it's got a combination of that. And then I also think that it's the natural evolution of slower balls, right? So slower balls sort of began as spin deliveries, then they became more like seam deliveries, and now they're going back to spin. So I think Mustafiza is a basically 85 mile an hour spin bowler, right? I think Bumrah is different, but I think he's a fast bowler with some of the skills of a spin bowler. And I do think that is the next evolution and where we're going. And what, and the funny thing is, it's actually where seam bowling started. And because of English pitches specifically, but I think pitches around the world, when we started to cover them very, very specifically, I think there was a natural split between the two. But if you go back and read about those early bowlers, there's a, like Fred Spofforth, we're talking 1878 there. You listen to him and it's like, is he talking about spin or pace? Right? Sydney Barnes. People said, oh, he's a pace bowler. And you'd be like, no, no, I'm a spinner. There was a lot more a mixture at that stage. And then when bowlers worked out how to bowl seam up and swing the ball, they went away from that, right? And now, because of slower balls, all of that is coming in. So the, I think what you're seeing is the natural evolution of fast bowling through a couple of those guys. Pat Brown's another one who hasn't even played that much international cricket. But when Pat Brown is fit, he's another guy who can basically bowl off spin, right, at 85 miles an hour. And so we are seeing these skills come in. And you know, Dwayne Bravo and Harshal Patel, you know, Andrew Tai, there's a lot of different guys who are bringing in these separate skills. And I think Bumrah has all the skills of a traditional fast bowler, right? He's not a great swing bowler, but he can get the ball to swing. He can certainly get it to seam. He can certainly get it to wobble. He can get it to reverse. And all those normal skills of fast bowlers. And then he has some things that spinners have. Yeah. Right. And the ball to what's his name? The England tail ender when he comes around the wicket that I've done a whole video on once.
Riyan Ahmed. Right?
No, not Riyan Ahmed. Ollie
Pope English. Is not a tail ender.
No, not Ollie, the other
Ollie Robinson. Right.
So at Lords, when he comes around the wicket, he is setting him up like an off spinner would set up a batter. The only difference is he's using bounces to begin with. Gets him in the position he wants, and then he bowls an off-spinner. That is a completely different level of bowling than we have seen before, but it is the natural evolution, right? Once Franklin Stevenson brought back the slower ball and made it about that sort of stuff, we kept seeing people develop further and further. And we've also seen spin bowling develop. It's incredible, actually, and I will do a video on this very soon. I don't know if we'll get it out for this World Cup, but the amount of things that T20 cricket is bringing back that had disappeared from old red ball cricket. Like, if when was the last time you watched a test match and you saw a finger spinner bowl an arm ball? Well, Akhil Hassan and Ashton Agar are bowling massive arm balls at the moment.
Yeah.
Right? They're bowling arm balls like Tim May used to bowl. He's like one of the last guys to bowl that sort of traditional swinging arm ball. And it's disappeared because in test cricket, it doesn't make any sense. The same with the leg cutter. We suddenly saw players bowling the leg cutter. People hadn't bowled the leg cutter since 1997 regularly. Right?
Yeah.
And you're seeing these old skills come back. And as I said, this is what Bumrah and the Fizz are doing, right? Similar. You can even, if you want to take it further, Malinga. We used to have round arm bowlers that were really tricky to play. And then we said, no, you've got to get your arm up high and use the bounce. And then Malinga comes along and we go back to round arm bowlers, which again hadn't dominated cricket since the 1850s.
That's crazy. And I mean, what just flatters the entire Bumrah case study is that not only does he have all of these tricks in the trade, literally every single trick in the trade at this point, but he's also a disruptor. He is helping the game evolve. And in the future, you're going to see more people with that sort of wrist, right? And that art would also graduate to its next level. And he is the pioneering point, at least in this generation, even if back in the day, Spofforth and Sid Barnes used to do something similar. So all things considered, right? I think both of us agree that, you know, he is an all-phase bowler, all-conditions bowler, all-format bowler. And I think both of us have also spoken about how, at least I can speak for myself, I think he is the best contemporary all-format cricketer, right? Not just bowler, cricketer. If you agree with that notion, by what degree is that true? And how close is the guy who is in second place? Who is the guy who's in second place?
a really good question, that. I think it would be really interesting to go through that line by line to see where that ends up. But you're right. We are definitely in that position of you know, how far removed is he from everyone else? And also, he's the best T20 player in the world at the moment, and he's a bowler, right? And he can only bowl 24 balls per game. You know, Travis Head might be, and Heinrich Klaassen, they can bat for 50 balls.
Yep.
Right? It's really, really interesting that he is in that position at the moment with that one skill set. And it just shows you how incredible he is. And, you know, there was a couple of years ago where he struggled a little bit, and Indian fans started going, oh, you know, maybe he's not, you know, and even when he didn't bowl well in the World Cup final, that thinking about him, it's just like,
by the way, when he was struggling, quote unquote, he was not going for runs then either. He was just not as incisive. That's what was happening.
He wasn't getting as many wickets. Yeah, that's true.
That was the only thing.
but yeah, so I don't think people realize how special he is, honestly. And, you know, we know Indian, Australian and English cricketers get overrated, right? Yeah. But because he's known as a T20 bowler first, one day bowler second, test bowler third, I don't think he actually gets the respect that he should. And he is just on a level that we have never seen before. We've certainly never seen anyone dominate all three formats with a ball the way that he currently is. And I don't know if we've ever seen a bowler as special in each individual format in the way that he is. He really is just a different kind of bowler. And the only thing that stops him, you know, getting to that real peak is just longevity, right? Can he doesn't bowl enough because he's injured too often. Can he have another 4 good years of, I'm not saying he has to be at this level because that would be ridiculous, but another 4 good years of great Jasprit Bumrah play. And then there's just no argument, right? He's right up there in that sort of, certainly top 5 all format bowlers, if not top 1 or 2 all format bowlers. And he has arguments for one of the greatest seam bowlers of all time in Test cricket as well. Yes. If he takes 240 wickets, say, and he ends up with a bowling average of less than 21, 22 when his home wicket is India, it's going to be hard to not even have him in any conversation from then. You know, so that's where we're going with him at that point, right?
I
greatest
feel like
all format
already,
bowler of all time. He might already be in the top 3.
I feel like, right? He's already India's best ever bowler in history. But, you know, sure, when his career ends, we can kind of look at where he stacks up as best all format bowler of all time. In contemporary cricket, I don't see a better cricketer than him across all formats. The only other guy I can think of right now, maybe two perhaps, is Travis Head, because he's seen a lot of success in Test cricket, right? And now he's, you know, hit some very, very important limited overs knocks for Australia as well. Even today's knock was top drawer. And then I guess Pat Cummins, based on the slower ones that he's bowling in T20 cricket now, because I'd say that Cummins and Bumrah are not that far apart in Test cricket from each other, right? But
I just think Bumrah is so much better in white ball cricket.
Yeah,
just
so much better in white ball cricket.
Cummins would have to be a lot better than he is in Test cricket to be a better all-format bowler than Bumrah. And I'm not sure that you wouldn't pick Bumrah ahead of Cummins as a Test bowler right at the moment. I think Cummins is much more tested. I think Cummins is much more tested. And so that might not hold up as well over the next 2 years when Bumrah continues to play Test cricket everywhere. But right at the moment, and I think I would pick Bumrah in all three formats over Cummins. That's how.
Yeah.
And there aren't many people who rate Cummins higher than I do. And I've been rating Cummins high for a very, very long time, well before people jumped in on the bandwagon. I thought he was absolutely magnificent. And I still think that Bumrah is at a level above him. I never saw Pete Garner. I obviously saw Pete McGrath. I think he's better than Pete McGrath at the moment, all format, partly because that extra yard that he can pull on at any stage. McGrath could get you out and would get you out, right? But he sometimes had to wear you out. Bumrah doesn't even have to do that. Bumrah can be McGrath and Mitchell Stark in one package. It really is ridiculous.
Yeah, I do feel like it's Jasprit Bumrah in, you know, contemporary all-format cricket. And then there's a football field, and then there's the next guy. And the next guy might be Pat Cummins, it might be Travis Head. I would have said KG Rabada was a contender before this T20 World Cup, I suppose. But there are a bunch of names you can throw in over there, but no one quite sits in that category with him. And you guys, whoever is watching this or listening in, let us know what you think about this particular argument and who is the second best all-format cricketer currently based on current form and the peaks that everyone is experiencing as is. But anyway, that brings us to an end of this particular Footmarks episode. Just a quick reminder to everybody that you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as a team at Good Areas, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. And let us know in the comments below your thoughts and who you think is the second best all-format cricketer. Make your arguments. We'll love to read them. And yeah, that'll be it for this particular episode. You guys have a good week. We'll be back with another episode of Footmarks next week. That's all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.